All right, we're about to go around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. I think I understood that text better that I read earlier. They said they weren't a huge college football fan because of youth sports, I'm guessing.
Oh, like yeah. That's what I was talking about.
That makes sense. Well, I mean, especially if you're playing the youth sports, you don't have the opportunity to be stuck in front of them.
I love you, son, but.
Wow, you're contemplating being a bad dad behind that. Very good. Somebody said weekend dance competitions, cheer mom. They got Saturday, Sunday competitions. Man,
all of the above.
All those. God bless you. God bless all you
dance competitions go 7 a.m. till 7 p.m.
You're just in there, in depth.
Yeah.
Just watching your baby shine bright like a diamond while also missing all the fun of the sports. And then on the YouTube page, they're giving me hell for saying I don't drink a lot, which I don't. I just, I think I can manage my liquor decently when I do. They said, I see, Brandon said, saving the drinking till our offensive line takes the field, I see. Yeah. Which, you know what?
Yeah.
Possibly fair.
Yeah.
I could see that. All right. Let's go around the NFL now as interesting weekend for football-associated things included. But the end of the weekend is where we got this latest piece of news. In fact, this morning is where we got it. Titans lose a quarterback for the season. Not one that I think that they care, imagine that they care too much about in Will Levis, who's having season-ending shoulder surgery. Or am I wrong there? Does this matter?
I think they care a little bit because he's about all they got behind, you know?
Yeah, I don't think it matter, man. Huh? I don't think it matter. They got their first overall pick who was a quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't think it matter who the backup is.
Well, were they going to throw him into the fray immediately no matter what?
Cam Ward?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes. I think they seen enough of Will Levis, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was absolutely where it was going to have to be was just Will Levis.
Because I don't know.
Will Levis, Cam Ward, just getting the lion's share. In fact, when I thought of this, I was like, what are the potential downsides? And I was like, I guess if Cam Ward is hurt, because I don't know. Is there a Cam Ward performance that is so bad that makes you go, oh no, we need to turn this over to Will Levis, assuming that he was.
There's always that. There's always that in the NFL. If it just starts going really, really bad, But I wouldn't anticipate that. But I think that's always on the table at some point. And you know, you look at them now. They have Tim Boyle.
Oh, good old Tim Boyle. He's still in the league, huh? Yeah. Still cashing checks.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tim Boyle, man. Don't they have Brandon Allen on that depth chart as well?
They do. They do.
Who, I mean, again, once we're getting to that point, we're just like, all right, it is what it is. But, no Will Levis, who, again, I don't know how much they wanted to be in that business to begin with. Mm-hmm. But I guess that does make it so that if the Cam Ward thing doesn't go 100% as expected, or more importantly, I think,
I guess the good thing is he was defense. A Texans killer. Last season, so
yeah, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. So I see
how much
why
of that is Will Levis, and how much that was just the secondary line.
I see it. Why everybody making this a big deal? Because I was wondering, I'm like, why everybody? He ain't playing over Cam Ward.
Yeah,
but I see why.
Mm-hmm. Some other things that are happening. Something that happened yesterday: a tight end, a wild tight end, appears as the Seattle Seahawks release Noah Fant, a tight end that came over, I think, in the trade that they said that they did, sending Russell Wilson to the Broncos. That was that whole deal. He ended up over there. I mean, a decent tight end, I think. But immediately I saw on social media,
of course,
the
did.
Thing that always happens when any player become of any level of note becomes available, which is, does he fit with our team?
Let's get him.
Lopez, I take you to our Lopez, does he fit with our team reporter. How do you feel on Noah Fant, tight end?
I don't know how I feel about this, simply because at this point, we don't know anything about what the tight end situation is going to look like. So I don't hate to be that guy, but hell, if they want him, I'm good with it. But I don't think they want him.
Do you feel like it is a need at tight end for the Texans, though?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. There's a need at tight end until we see otherwise. Yeah. You know. We know Dalton Schultz has got to play better in this system. We know that Cade Stover is counted upon, but we don't know how they're going to be if it's going to play out that way.
Yeah. What's interesting is I immediately went to the place where I go, I don't know that Noah Fant fills what you're kind of looking for, per se. And I think we're hoping for development of Cade Stover. I do also immediately think of the depth that you have there at tight end still leaves room for the possibility of the Brevin Jordan, Brevin Jordan season, which I don't know. I feel like I have not talked about a lot. However, it still feels very possible in my mind. I know that he's not your pass blocker in the ways, or, you know, blocker, but the pass catching has always been very, very intriguing to me. So, like, the possible upside of him being a better option for Dalton Schultz, or just Dalton Schultz being better,
just Dalton Schultz being better, I think it's still on there for you.
Yeah. So I don't know that I necessarily look towards the Noah Fant addition of just adding another guy to that room, especially with those guys that you feel strongly about. But the watchword is competition. Like, if you could get him for a really cheap deal, I know that part of the reason why the Seahawks are release him is that they get off, I think, some like $9 million of money for him. So, like, they do that right then. And the what seemed to be the impetus was Elijah Arroyo out of Miami, tight end out of Miami, that I liked quite a bit, kind of plays almost wide receiver like Elijah Arroyo. He finally got his deal signed. I think he was one of the second rounders that got his, or I might have that wrong, but he's one of the guys that finally gets his rookie deal signed. So he will be in camp. I think that when they had that solidified, that gave them a little bit of leeway, the Seahawks, to go, all right, I think we can move on.
But he will get a job.
He's good enough that somebody needs to have him on their roster. I just don't know. Is that somebody that you, or is that a guy that you feel like you need to put on this team into that competition?
I don't know. I want to see what these guys look like, to be honest.
But I guess we will watch that space.
Yeah.
To be honest, some other things that are happening around the NFL, as we kept tracking the guys who were getting their deals. Did I mention that Tyler Shuck did indeed get his
fully guaranteed
deal at 40? Mm-hmm. That one came through. But speaking of deals and the pass rusher market that I imagine we are watching to some degree, but also not watching, because Will Anderson Jr. exists at the high end of it.
Mm-hmm.
George Karlaftis, the pass rusher, for the Kansas City Chiefs, he gets his contract. It is a, 4 years?
88, but
ultimately it's like $93 million, and $62 million is guaranteed, including the old money that he had on his deal. He ends up being a top 10 highest paid edge rusher, but he's not at the very top fringe of it. And I don't know that he should be, but he's a very good pass rusher. What were your takeaways from saying that the Kansas City Chiefs get another guy inked on the deal?
Well, outside of the Chiefs, yet again, proving that they can get things done. Outside of that, Karlaftis made it, what you just mentioned, he made it into the top 10 of highest paid. I think he had 8 sacks last year. Will Anderson's paying attention. There's no question about that. But he got 62 guaranteed into the top 10 with 8 sacks. I mean, it's going to be expensive, man.
It is, but yeah. I mean, that's going to be at the top end. Now, the part I think that he's looking less at George Karlaftis in my mind, I think he's looking up there at Frisco, Texas, where the Dallas Cowboys practice. I think their training camp is actually out in California, where it was reported this weekend Micah Parsons will indeed attend a training camp. We haven't talked a lot about the Micah Parsons standoff of sort, because it feels like it's generally in the MO of the Dallas Cowboys to not pay their guys until it's way, way late, and then maybe pay too much, considering that they probably would have been able to get something done if they had done something earlier.
Yeah.
But this is the latest iteration of that, falling in line with CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott. Here is Micah Parsons, a dude who they're going to pay.
They have to.
They just have to pay.
Yeah.
But he is, I mean, not that he's been in a holdout type situation, because that's obviously not been the opportunity, but there's been a lot of conversation, and clearly there's the adversarial feel of, is he going to get more versus what the Cowboys want to give him? They're going to pay him. It's just how much. And I think with the Cowboys' MO and with the way this is breaking out, although he's not going to hold out, I do wonder if that's going to make them more amenable to getting a reasonable deal. I think that they might push the number above where we have been with Myles Garrett, now with T.J. Watt, to where that is the thing that I think Will Anderson Jr. will be watching of, you know, what does the number look like for the top edge rushers in the league.
And just on Micah, what I interpret this as is they're very, very close on a deal. Him reporting, oftentimes a guy will report like, okay, it looks like, you know, we have a number, we have the parameters of it, I'm going to report, we're not going to make any big stink about things. I think we're going to hear something on him very soon.
I could see that. Yeah. I could also see it, because Micah Parsons seems to be a dude who falls a little bit more in line with the organizational thought process and philosophy more than maybe some of the other guys that have held out historically, that have maybe not been guys that fall in line as much, although maybe that doesn't fit with the quarterback who, you know, has been that kind of guy as well. But yeah, that's definitely going to be a place to watch for Will Anderson Jr. and for the Texans. Not that, again, I was listening to a podcast that was breaking down some of, especially the second round picks, like those guys and the you know, seeming collective action that seemed to be happening with second rounders not not signing unless they could push, it seemed like, the guaranteed money higher than what the slot had been previous years. And in talking about that, they also acknowledged Nick Caserio's kind of, for lack of a better term, wanton behavior when it came to giving contract. It made me just come back to the idea of Will Anderson Jr. has nothing to worry about. Like, that deal is not going to be tough to get hammered out, is it?
No, I mean, they've already showed, they've already laid out the path and what the number's going to be. And obviously, if he gets, you know, has a very good season, it's going to be almost automatic. And Nick Caserio is very good at getting these deals done quickly.
Yes, he is. He makes sure to get those things done. And so I'm excited. It's just now we see what the number is, especially because you're going to have to find a way to get all these fit in together.
Yeah.
I want to get this here because, well, I guess I'll let me throw this in here real quick before I get to this other one. So President Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know. He's
switching
taking
the music.
He's taking to social media. And this very much fits with the NFL. I'm not trying to go anywhere particularly wild, but on social media, he has seemed to kind of take aim at the Cleveland Guardians in baseball, but then specifically the Washington Commanders, kind of trying to get them to change the name. And if it was just that, it would be one thing. He seemed to put the pressure on the Commanders, Josh Harris, by also making the claim that he will not help get a deal done on the new stadium that they're trying to build if they do not.
Yeah.
And I think that is the part that makes this really interesting. I know that without getting too far into the weeds on politics, Donald Trump can use things like this at times for political means, for, you know, just draw attention to this thing, maybe against attention to somewhere else that he wants. I don't know. Or maybe it's just like a culture war thing, whatever you want to term that. I'm not digging into that. But how real do you think is this threat when it comes to the Commanders, who were actively, you know, moving and getting the ball rolling towards getting a stadium back at the JFK site? To get a new stadium away from what had been like widely panned, the stadium that they currently were in previously, FedEx Field. What is it now? I can't even remember. This could put a wrench in because DC is a very particular place that requires federal oversight. It's not in a state and, you know, pursuant or like beholden to those regulations in the same way.
Well, I don't know. I'm not pretending to know on this topic. But as much as you just said, it's sort of its own thing, and there is federal influence and jurisdiction, et cetera. Can he? Isn't it more about the owners and the league, you know, in terms of stadiums and approvals and all that?
I think that portion of it, but funding, I think, ends up being a tough thing.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
It seems like the team, the Commanders, and the mayor have a really good rapport as of right now.
Yeah.
But all the funding for the District of Columbia comes through the federal government, and obviously Donald Trump is at the top of that. I'm going to be watching that space because that might be very interesting to see, like, how that meddles. And I'm sure the NFL, this is the bigger part that I wanted to get to. I'm sure the NFL is like, damn it, we're here again. Because I thought the NFL really, really rued the situation where last time Donald Trump was in office, he stuck his nose into the NFL's dealings when it came to the Colin Kaepernick thing. And then that became a whole situation for the NFL where they had this push and pull that they never really want. I don't know if this will rise to the same level because this is more
new. I mean, when you mention the name, it might.
The team name portion of
it. Yeah. It might. And again, I don't know. I mean, it's just uncomfortable for everybody. And I don't think anybody wants it to be uncomfortable like that.
Yeah. I wonder if this ends up being, and again, trying to stay very surface level on this political portion of it, I wonder if this ends up being like a passing fascination or if this ends up being a sticking point, because that could really hamper a Washington team that had really done a good job trying to turn the page. But the only thing that I could point to of them maybe not being playing big league ball is not signing up Terry McLaurin, which I think you also still have a reasonable expectation of the way that wide receivers fall off the cliff at like 30, it seems like nowadays, as a 29-year-old. You can maybe see that this is a level of mess that I think the Commanders really did not want.
Yeah, like I said, they don't need it to be uncomfortable. They don't want this in their lives right now, but here it is.
And then finally, before we move on here, Tyler Smith, the guard for the Dallas Cowboys, said that the goal for the team and that he has this year is a championship. Is that fair or not for a team like the Dallas Cowboys that was not all that good last year, new head coach and all that, however, they are going into a season like any other football team?
Yeah, look, I would, if it's Cowboys related and you kind of do an eye roll about it, but isn't every player saying that?
Yeah.
Every player in, on every team saying the same. I have no problem with this. I think this is fine.
And then, because I know you love it, the top 100 player of the day.
All right, moving on. What do we got next?
You get three of them. You get three of them this time.
What do we
71
get?
Is Detroit safety Kirby Joseph.
Cool.
Number 70 was Washington Commanders linebacker Frankie Louvu. Very good linebacker.
Yeah.
And then number 69, nice, Philadelphia offensive lineman Jordan Mailata.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Cool.
React.
No Texans still.
I was telling Reggie before the show, Figgy, I am so bothered by this. Not like on a personal level, but like as we've talked about, because like it's so stupid, you know, to get people to talk about this top 100 list when you're doing one a day. I'm more bothered by it from an NFL perspective. Like, how dumb was the person that said this is a good marketing strategy? This is a good way to get people talking about our list, releasing one name a day.
It seemed like they trying to stretch this out so it can last into the regular season.
And what does that prove? No one's going to talk about this list, which we're talking about all the other lists.
Jordan Mailata, 69.
There we go.
No Texans still.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, all right. What does
it mean, Reggie?
Coming up next, that's around the NFL here in the loop. Coming up next, it's kind of NFL related, but we get even further down on the sports business thing. But we got some juicy details about the former NFLPA director and what caused him to resign, and more drama that's happening with labor disputes. We'll talk about it next. Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Excited for football returning here in really a couple days for us to really see it live and in person, see the guys getting out there working, seeing what the permutations of the offensive line are, seeing what some of the rookies look like, all these things that are very intrigued in. I'm sure you are as well. Ain't that right?
Yeah. I think coaches are in the office today. Players are reporting tomorrow, and we are on the field on Wednesday.
Man, we are almost there. Yeah. It feels great to be there. Over the weekend, as it feels like the NFL is like getting some of their affairs in order for camp, as some teams have indeed began camp. A lot of them begin this week, as the Texans do. And one of the affairs that NFL players need to get in order is figure out what the hell they're doing with a Players Association head.
Man. Okay, go ahead. Because there are so many levels to this that are just bothersome if you're an NFL player.
Yeah, there's a lot of levels to this. And one of them is that, you know, you just need to find somebody to get this thing in order as you continue to go. But we got more and more details from the person that I like to call the feds, Don Van Natta Jr., along with Kalen Kaler. Because when Don Van Natta comes knocking, he has some answers. And before we even get there, shout out to Pablo Torre doing like the level of investigative journalism along with Mike Florio that it feels like we used to get a lot more frequently that we now have to outsource in a way, which is kind of unfortunate. But Don Van Natta giving us the kind of investigative journalism that I like because we're getting information, but also there are really funny details in here. Mm-hmm. Like I think, you know, I'm very intrigued by the way that this labor thing happens. And I think I took it to places that were really far where what does this mean if they get the next guy in there and what can they do? I just want to talk a little bit more about Lloyd Howell Jr., who was previously the executive director. Apparently, we find out that he sued in 2011 for sexual discrimination retaliation when he was the senior executive director or a senior executive at Booz Allen, which is like a consulting firm. But before we get there, we also are outside of that, because obviously that's not the fun part. The fun part is that apparently this guy that the NFLPA brought in to be like, he is an executive. He's been in more of the business world. We want an executive that's going to be able to kind of talk to the NFL and talk through these deals. Seems like they missed out on one thing, is that he feels like he thought he was just in the corporate world entirely, because at one point it was made evident that he actually went to a strip club for a meeting and put it on the company card for the Players Association. Did you see this?
I did see this. I guess, you know, this is one of those where he's probably, or people who defend him could say, well, technically it was a meeting. It's just like the optics here are just, by the way, I think it was Tootsie's, right? wasn't it that place, that real famous place in the Miami area? Anyway, it doesn't matter. To do this, it's just, this is one of the levels that I was talking about where if I'm a player, I'm thinking, what, this is the guy, this is where my money is going, this is what's happening. And, you know, they're in a mess right now. They have to come up with some answers and some leadership.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, yeah. I mean, Like I said, the thing that really this showed me, obviously, there's more details in it. One of the things that I found amazing is that the person that he was with, who also was in the Players Association, that they wanted to pay for some themselves, and he basically was like, nah, put it on the account. I was like, oh, okay, he does not get this on like a deeper level. Like, if you, in order to have these conversations at the high end of this, you need to understand a union. And it feels like he was operating this like, you know, what I imagine the caricature of a businessman who's just like, oh, I got the company card and I use that for what I'll use it for. Union does not, should not operate like that. It's obviously there not just to serve what it does, but serve the people that it helps. And that's why all of the lack of accountability there was, you know, kind of odd. With all that being the case, then in the weekend, we find out that, you know, with Lloyd Howell now stepping down, resigning, not being available to continue, the NFLPA needs to find who the next guy is that they put into this place. And so there was two names that have been thrown out there as possibilities to step in there. And one of them is the guy who was the previous president, J.C. Treader, who it seems through roundabout ways actually got Lloyd Howell that position. Apparently, he opened up to Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports because he is now stepping down from the union entirely. And I want to see if you agree or if you believe what he's selling. Okay, I have a feeling. He says that in stepping down, he told CBS Sports, over the last couple of days, it's gotten very, very hard for my family, and that's something I can't deal with. So the short bullet points are, I have no interest in being executive director. I have no interest in being considered. I've left the executive committee, or let them rather know, that I'm also going to leave the NFLPA in the coming days because I don't have anything left of the organization. But he also, he very much wanted you to let you know that this is not because of anything else. Like, he just feels like, you know, the last few days have been hard for the organization, or for him.
Okay, so this is not to be insensitive, but his number one reason there is, it's been hard on my family. I don't remember seeing like the internet going nuts about J.C. Treader and you know talking about all the problems he has. I mean, it's been discussed, but it, like, is this something that you affect? You know, it affects his family that deeply, that much. You know, just this viral thing that's going on. No, I think this is just very internal. This is something that he knew he got pressure to be ousted, and he's out. I think it's as simple as that.
He went as further as I just want to get my story out there. I don't want it to look like this was sour grapes, or I didn't get the job, and I wanted the job. All I wanted to do was tell my story and then go be with my family. And I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either.
Like, I don't believe, like, I don't think that you have Lloyd Howell step down. There's a few days. There's conversations about the possibility of him being one of the two finalists to possibly be an interim director.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there is a, never mind, I'm stepping back because people are talking about me.
Yeah, I don't get that. You know, I mean, yes, people are talking about this.
And this is
in
a dude,
the circle.
This is a dude that admittedly like has been, and people kind of know him to be this, a guy that kind of doesn't care that he's not necessarily liked. And I feel like that's kind of one of the chief characteristics that you want in a labor union boss, is a dude who that's okay not being liked.
For the other reasons, though.
Yeah, I guess that's fair, right? Yeah. Not amongst the union.
Not amongst
ranking,
your own people.
Rank, yeah.
Because that's the thing that is standing out as you're watching some very powerful people, former players in the NFL, talking about this. They're just so frustrated, and they feel deceived. That's not the kind of talking about someone that you want. I mean, they feel like they've been deceived. They feel like they've got the wrong leaders in place, and they need, as I mentioned earlier, they need to clean house. And by the way, this is this is the most important thing the NFLPA has done in a long time, is find the right leadership.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie, though, right? The idea that he was one of the finalists to be the interim after all of like the information that we were starting to get. And I imagine there's a lot more that possibly will continue to roll out. I was, when we were talking on Friday with B. Scott about the idea of, hey, they have to have an open kind of process to try and find a guy that I imagine maybe is more of a dog in in union type spaces and trying to get them more.
Yeah.
And maybe in the next CBA that could possibly push them into getting more money, getting more of the things that they want, and maybe not being viewed as such a limp, you know, kind of players association.
Yeah.
The idea that they were willing to go back to J.C. Treader, even on an interim basis, kind of like makes me feel like, nah, same old NFLPA. And I understand the difficulties, but that was a little disappointing because I was like, oh, is this going to be the time where the players association actually gets some things that might actually help this?
It's
players.
And the other thing is the NFL and NFL owners are loving this because the NFLPA, unless something drastic happens, they're not going to be number one, experienced in the next collective bargaining, discussions and negotiations. And number two, they're going to have relatively new faces that the NFL and the NFLPA, and the owners, they're going to want to push around, and they're going to be more likely to be able to push around and get their way.
Anyways, I found that to be interesting. And just the idea that, oh boy, Loy Howell decided,
no,
you know what we're going to do?
Yeah.
Company Dom, don't worry about it.
Put it on the card.
Just put it on the card. I find that to be a hilarious kind of mentality. Like, how is that what sinks you, buddy? Of all the things to sink you, is just.
I think that was just the juiciest anecdote of many.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping, including the bad, but a little bit of good weekend that the Astros had. Let's talk about that and more next. All right, let's get into what's popping here in loop on Sports Radio 610. Happy Monday to you again. As I'm about to ruin it, because we got to talk about the weekend that was for the Houston Astros. Houston Astros got a lot of things popping. Where do we begin? One of them was the Sunday game, which was, I think, the largely good part of it.
Oh, it ended up, you know, about as good as you could hope.
11 unanswered runs by the Astros, started off by a guy who I hope this ends up being a spark that catches tinder and leads into a level of flame in Christian Walker. Solo shot, got the thing going to some degree when you talked about offensively, and then you got all sorts of dudes piling in. To get you to those 11 runs after you had gone down in that game. One of the reasons why you went down, Hunter Brown only going 4 innings with 3 earned runs in the series finale, which is, do you know the last time that he went less than 5 innings?
Yeah, I was watching the broadcast and they mentioned it, and I'm drawing a blank right now.
Against the Mariners.
Yeah,
May 5th of 2024, he went 4 2/3.
Mm-hmm.
So like, very weird circumstances. Do you have any concern for Hunter Brown? Because in this game, I mentioned he only went 4. First couple of innings, diesel, right? Like he looked like Hunter Brown.
Yeah.
Throwing a little bit too many pitches at some point. And then in the fourth inning, you could see with his first 4-seam fastball that's usually like 97-ish, started getting to like 96, 95, 94 fastball-wise. And in my mind, that could be one of two things. Like, that could just be there's still a level of fatigue. And, you know, even though he made it to the All-Star break, he'd been doing a lot of heavy lifting. And maybe that All-Star break wasn't enough of a rest just to get him all the way vibrant. Or, and I hate to be Debbie Downer, is this the thing that you do that happens where, and of course, it's a very small portion of, like, drop-off of velocity, but where you start seeing drop-off velocity before bad things happen?
Yeah. I actually don't. I thought yesterday's game was very him. He was just overpowering guys for the first 3 innings and looking as good as he ever has. I feel like some weird things happened for him to fall behind 3-0. First of all, some cheap hits and then a legit single that drove in 2, I believe. Then they scratched out another run. I feel like it wasn't like he got in his head. I actually mentioned this when we were watching the game. It wasn't like he got in his own head like Fromber used to do, you know, and maybe just kind of it shook him. I feel like he tried to get too fine. He tried to, like, place pitches instead of just throwing like he was in the first few innings. And maybe it's because he knew who was on the other side of on the mound for the other team. I think he was trying to, like, I cannot let this get away more than 2 runs or 3 runs or whatever, because Wu is not going to allow anyone. No way, no how he's going to allow more than 3 runs. Well, he did.
Yep. God bless him.
And I think that was what was the difference. I don't really feel concerned about Hunter Brown. I feel like he kind of was trying to be too fine, placing the ball, et cetera. And then lo and behold, the Astros got to Wu, who has been an overwhelming pitcher. Hell, he had a no-hitter for 8 innings against the Yankees week before the All-Star.
Is that good?
Yeah, exactly. So it was... It was more so that doesn't concern me. There are things that concern me, but
so Hunter, like not but, even the fact, because this texter comes in and they're right from the 713. Yeah. Last few starts, I think the last 3
velocity. You can look at
not even velocity, just like 6 earned runs against Cleveland in that game that ultimately goes 10 innings, and then 4 earned runs in the Rangers series. Yeah. You started to see a little bit of a, for lack of a better term, downturn towards Hunter Brown, and we kind of looked at it as, okay, maybe it's a level of fatigue heading to the All-Star break on the backside that you get this as well.
If you're concerned with Hunter Brown, I'm not going to say you're wrong. I'm telling you, I don't feel that as much.
Fair enough.
And for that reason, based on, obviously yesterday I thought he got too fine. The other thing is, and I think I mentioned this last week, July has always been rough for him. I don't know if he has to ramp back up, if he gets, you know, the proverbial second wind, or he does something different. He picks it back up after July, and that's one. The things I am concerned about are the obvious
ones. Power rank the bads, Lopez. Go ahead.
It was, what did I say? It was bad news, good news yesterday. Over the weekend. Yesterday was the good news. The bad news, of course, is, you know, the biggest one.
Is it the one that sounds like this?
Ball hit hard to left to Rosarena back, and he'll watch it bounce off the base of the wall. And Isak Paredes is grabbing his right hamstring, and that is not a good sign. Isak dealt with a hamstring issue earlier this season, missed a series against Minnesota. And the Astros, who already have 15 players on the injured list.
Make it 16.
That's it.
Make it 16. Five of them started the season as starters this year. Shout out to Chandler Rome for that. Yeah, this is an epidemic at this point of injuries. And this one is going to be significant, immediately placed on the 10-day IL, which will put you right about the trade deadline. This is going to be a big week for Dana Brown and trying to figure out how to make sure these Astros continue to stay on mission and give themselves the best opportunity to compete in the ways that it felt like they were capable of mere weeks ago.
That's the worst of the bad news. I don't think it's close. One of the players, obviously an all-star, that has been one of the most important players, if not the most important player for the Astros. But there are a lot of other things going on right now. And with regard to the trade deadline, keep in mind, the Astros are in Arizona today for three games. And in Arizona, there's going to be a lot of scouts from other teams, particularly teams that are potential roadblocks for you. The Seattle Mariners are one of the teams that is high on the list of trade suitors for Eugenio Suarez. So are the New York Yankees. He's a guy that has 35 home runs and is one of the guys that a lot of teams, probably number one in terms of players that that teams are going to be looking for.
I don't think Eugenio Suarez is one that the Astros are going to be
looking for. No, I'm saying, but other teams are.
100%.
Mariners and Yankees in particular. Don't look now, but the Toronto Blue Jays they have the best record in the AL East. They're on a bit of a heater. The Red Sox are on a bit of a heater. The American League has gotten really, really hot, while the Astros have lost, I believe, 7 out of 9.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is correct.
So a lot of things to be concerned about right now.
Yeah. They're back. Like you mentioned, we're going to watch some baseball in Phoenix, from Phoenix today with Colin Gordon on the mound. Can I give you a little bit of trade deadline scuttlebutt from Jim Bowden of The Athletic? This was he has the Astros sixth on kind of trade deadline intel here. And what he says of the Astros in a segment that I like to call reading, the Astros have made it clear to opposing general managers that they want a left-handed bat, preferably someone who can play second base. Brandon Lau of the Rays would be a perfect trade fit for them, and he comes with a 2026 team option. They're also focused on starting pitching, but in all likelihood, they'll make the trade for either a left-handed bat or starting pitcher, not both.
Not both. To me, that stood out. And I think now more than ever, it's got to be an infielder. It's got to be a left-handed bat. It's got to be an infielder that you go get, just because Paredes is going to miss a month minimum, in my view. Nobody's officially said anything like that. But
wait till you hear from Dana Brown.
He'll say he'll be back.
Give him a week or two.
He's hitting off a tee or something like that. But no, it'll be at least a month, and you can't afford it. I mentioned the other teams that are hot, the other teams that are making moves for big-time hitters, like Suarez, who has 35 home runs. That's a big ad for whomever gets him, and if it's the Mariners, they're right behind you. The Astros have to be proactive here.
Feels like a lot of the big kind of trade targets as of right now, week and some out from trade deadlines, huh? There's a lot of third basemen that you start talking about. And I do wonder if that's a good or a bad thing for the Astros. If more of the concentration on infield is more on third baseman, does that then maybe give you the possibility, if they're a second baseman, like if Brandon Lau is indeed available, does that give them more leeway to not have to, have a more robust market that they're fighting with in order to acquire their services? Especially because I think if you get a second baseman that you can trust on an everyday basis, that does open up a level of cover for your third base space, because Mauricio Dubon, I think, steps in that space with, of course, the continued support of like a Shea Whitcomb or what have you at third.
I totally agree. You can have Dubon there. Dubon is really becoming the most important player on this team when you look at all the...
Yeah.
He really is, because he can play so many different spots and he can kind of cover you in so many different spots. He's a guy that you just have to keep healthy, put him in mothballs, put him in bubble wrap, whatever you want to do in between games, because he's so versatile. We saw it yesterday. He was playing shortstop. And Whitcomb, I guess, was at third base, and now he can move, play some third base or whatever. You look at the players on the – you mentioned 16 players on the IL. They can put a roster on the field. They can put a lineup on the field that might be the second or third best in the division just with the players that are on their IL. DeZenzo could play first, Rogers second, Paredes third, Peña shortstop. Then you got Leon, Myers, and Melton in the outfield. DH, Yordan. You know, your swing guy is going to be Guillaume. Your starting pitchers, Arrigetti, Blanco, Franz, Garcia, Javier, Wisniewski. That's a team that can contend in this division that's on the IL.
100%. We'll dive more into that as we go. But, yeah, that's where the Astros are looking at. The 16th man on the IL. Kix Rocks asks, why are we not talking about Fromber? And that was the next thing I was going to mention. Mm-hmm. Fromber was not starting till Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting because, I mean, he had all of All-Star break. What do you make of it? Because he does need some rest, as those two kind of top guys did need, and it feels like Hunter Brown having the outing that he did yesterday kind of further proved that.
Well, remember they brought Hunter Brown to pitch on that Sunday.
Yes.
They brought him back on, I guess, regular rest. Not 6 days, not 5 days or whatever, but regular rest. And then he pitches again coming out of the All-Star break on the next Sunday. And Fromber's getting a longer rest. Is that an eyebrow raiser? To me, it's just interesting because he could have pitched. I think a lot of people were projecting he was going to pitch, you know, before the weekend started. Yep. On Sunday. So maybe it's nothing to see here, but maybe he just needs the rest. He's feeling some fatigue.
What was the eyebrow raiser for you? What do you think?
That they didn't come back with Fromber and they came back
He's getting extended rest right now.
Like, okay, yeah. No, you think it's an injury or you think they're trying to play some type of chess?
I don't want
to
put
that. For the first time, you don't, huh?
I don't want to put that.
Yeah, no, I was trying to see where you're going. I didn't know if you think they're trying to play chess and not checkers. And
my gut tells me maybe he had arm fatigue.
It sounds like an injury to me.
No, fatigue. Hey, is fatigue.
Hey.
I think they're like, you know what? Let's err to the side of caution. Let's
forearm strain.
Cut that out. Stop it. We can't afford that at all. Stop it.
Figgy is feeling a particular way today.
Stop it. The last thing I'll talk about with baseball. Big John Singleton back.
I was trying to see what the hell John was talking about, man.
Don't you think, though, it's just like, let's just give him extra rest.
I think that's what it was, and hopefully that's sufficient for
because
what it
of
is.
The strain.
Buddy, don't – no. Big John Singleton coming back, wearing the number 35, yay or nay?
Sure.
Like, he might be the last person to wear 35 before they ultimately get a chance to retire it because it feels like JV, this is going to be the one for him, and then you're hanging that one up, right?
Yeah, hanging that one up.
Why would they let JV – Big John have this number?
I don't know. Is he just friends?
Shout out to John Singleton, who, again, making it back to the big league club after re-signing with Sugarland. But I was like, huh, Big John wearing 35, huh? Some other things that are happening this weekend. Shout out to the Dynamo. Get a little bit of a draw against Philadelphia Union. Of course, it's Jack McGlynn scoring. He's becoming a little bit of a star boy himself, making sure to get the one goal to help get a draw against his boyhood club, Philadelphia Union. Did you see this? Last week, a 22-minute workout video with Amen Thompson came out. He's working out with a development coach, NBA, WNBA guy called the Guard Whisperer. How much stock do you put in like these type of summer things? It's not the regular like Instagram 2-minute video. It's 22 minutes of like an advanced workout of him working on his jumper, trying to find a little more consistency. By the end of the 22 minutes, I could still see that like he does the thing that we all do where you figure it out. I mean, this is probably more akin to golf, I think, for the average person, where you figure out your swing a little bit, and then the first thing goes, you start thinking about that, and then another thing, like, you know, I'm worrying about making sure that my hands are right, and then I start putting too much in my left
elbow
foot.
Elbow out, whatever.
It felt like that was happening a little bit, but it is good that he's having a significant amount of work in the shooting. How much stock do you put in there?
I don't put a lot of stock into workout videos in general. I saw another one today. Nick Chubb, you know, was leg press.
Here we go, baby!
Squatting 600
Let's
pounds.
Let's go!
I mean, it's impressive. It can be cool to see, but I don't put a lot of stock in them as far as being meaningful. I did see this, and I don't know how meaningful it is. I think it's important for the Rockets to do this. Did you see Fred VanVleet and Ime Udoka went to Turkey to work out with Şengün?
We knew that that was going to happen. Yeah. I didn't realize that that was happening this weekend.
Again, I won't put much stock into the actual workout, but I think it's important. They're like, hey, we'll go work out with you.
I actually think that that's important, and of course, I'm gonna have to put a dollar in the hat because this recalls for me covering the Mavericks when they would. I mean, damn near every summer they're over there in Slovenia, going there and hanging out with Luka Doncic. I think it's a level of acknowledgement of how what level Alper and Şengün exists in the like org chart, so to say. Like he's still the dude that is the all-star on this team. They acquiesce to him, and so going to Turkey in order to
they're
do
saying
that,
you're that important,
you mean that much, and like his development does matter that much to this organization. If he continues to take steps, you're talking about not just a level of hey, we got KD, but a sustainability that goes beyond wherever KD's next 1, 2, 3 years of playing with these Rockets is. So that does matter and continues to show like
but the workout video itself doesn't really matter.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. From the 713, would you rather have Yuli Gurriel or Mauricio Dubon on this Astros team right this moment?
This moment? Dubon.
How is Yuli doing? Is he doing okay?
No, this he's around.
I think they mean the platonic ideal of Yuli Gurriel. Yeah, okay. I don't even know if they mean like Yuli.
Dubon playing everywhere. That's more important right now for this squad.
Where you're plugging holes
right
everywhere.
Now. Yeah.
Putting finger in the dike.
All right. As soon as I said plugging holes, I was like, he's going to do the thing. It is new. People are getting off for lunch right now.
That is an absolute saying. It's an old.
Are there babies in the car? I'm trying to think. we not back at school yet. Yeah, there's babies in the car, man. Yeah. Come on. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us on this Monday. Coming up next, I'm still trucking through my rewatch of the 2024 Texan season, and I reach week 11, Monday Night Football at Dallas. Let's have some fun next.